We're going to be in Matthew 25, so if you want to go ahead and turn to Matthew 25, we'll be there shortly. I thought I would start out by explaining to you what a talent is. I got the parable of the talents, and I just wanted to give you an idea what a talent actually is. A talent is actually a measure of weight. It's actually the largest of the Hebrew measures of weight. Their weight system started out with a gerah, which was weighed about as much as a grain of barley. It's a little tiny thing. And then went up from there to a shekel, about 20 gerah made up a shekel. And a shekel is a real common coin that they used, a 20 shekel or a 20 gerah coin, a shekel coin. Super common. You hear about that a lot in the Bible. The next weight up would be the manah, which is about 60 shekels, and it weighed about a pound, okay? Like a British pound, okay? And then up from that would be the talent, and the talent was about 60 manah, or about 60 pounds, somewhere between 60 and 80 pounds, we think. Unger's Bible Dictionary says it this way: a talent seems to have been a full weight for an able man to carry, okay? 2 Kings 5:23 explains there was two servants that went out before this man, and they each carried a talent. So that's kind of where they're getting it from, that it took a man to carry, a healthy man, to carry a talent. It makes me think of, like, I did some farming and stuff when I was younger, and working on the farm, you have the 50-pound feed sacks, and you got 75-pound bales of hay, and everything's kind of weighed out so an able-bodied man can pick those things up and carry them around. It's the same thing. I've done a lot of construction recently, and construction, concrete bags, shingle bundles, all those kind of things are weighed out so that one man can carry those things, and that seems to be what a talent was. Here's your talent. Great big bag. It was a sack, probably, of something. The NIV actually says it was sacks of gold. That would be nice. 60, 80 pounds of gold. That'd be all right, huh? Some translations say a sack of money. Some say it was $10,000. The amount's not really relevant, okay, the dollar amount. But if you want to know, the approximate current value of a talent of gold would be about $1.2 million. A talent of silver, today's market, would be about $20,000. And a talent of copper would be about $5,000, something like that. So that gives you an idea of what a talent actually was. So I want to take a look at this story, and I want to kind of tell it in a little bit of a different way to kind of update it, because we don't often get talents anymore nowadays. So I want to talk about it a little bit differently and see if we can understand it a little better, maybe relate it to ourselves a little better. Let's say there's this guy, the CEO of a large company, maybe like a Steve Jobs, Bill Gates, kind of a, you know, big, well-known guy, big, large company. And he calls in, he's getting ready to leave, he's got to go, he's going to be gone, not just for a few months like Pastor Scott, but he's going to be gone for a while. And so he calls in three of his employees, just random employees he brings in, three guys. And he says, all right, you, I'm going to give 5 years' wages to. And the next guy, I'm going to give you 2 years' wages. And then the third guy, I'm going to give you 1 year's wages, okay? And I'm just going to give those to you. I'm going to be gone. I'll see you guys after a while. Now, let's say that the guy with 5 years' wages takes it. He invests it immediately. Say it's like a Steve Jobs kind of a guy. So he comes in. He invents the new iPhone 7, right? And he doubles his money. He takes his 5 years' wages. He invents this iPhone 7. Everybody has to have it. And he doubles his money, gets 10 years' wages out of it. And let's say the 2 years guy does the same thing. Maybe he comes up with an app or some kind of accessory for this iPhone 7. Everybody's got to have it. He doubles his money. He does really well. And let's say the third guy with his 1 year's wages goes home, takes his check, he cuts a little hole in his mattress, and he stuffs the check in his mattress, and he sews it up. Now, after a while, the CEO comes back, this big guy comes back, and he calls in his three guys, and he says, why you been away? While I've been away, what have you been doing? And, you know, how excited would the first two guys be? How would they feel? And the third guy, what would his disappointment be? And then how would you feel? Think about that. If you were one of those two situations, how would it make you feel? The truth of this story that we're looking at today that Jesus is telling us is it's about him. He's coming back. He will want to know what we've been doing when he's been gone. This passage is sandwiched in the Olivet Discourse with another parable about being ready, the parable of the 10 virgins, where 5 were ready and 5 weren't. It's an eschatological passage. It's about culmination. It's about the second advent when Christ returns, and it's about judgment. Eschatology is the study of how things end. And there's a lot of different views on how things are going to end. But the cold hard truth is that we have a personal eschatology. We will come to an end. We don't know how or when, but every human being on earth at some point in some way will end. The parable of virgins tells us to be ready, and this parable tells us we better be doing something while we're waiting. So let's take a look. If you're in Matthew 25, we're going to start in verse 14. The kingdom of heaven is like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted to them his property. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, to each according to his ability. Then he went away. He who had received the 5 talents went at once and traded with them, and he made 5 talents more. So also he who had the 2 talents made 2 talents more. But he who had received the 1 talent went and dug in the ground and hid his master's money. Now after a long time, the master of those servants came and settled accounts with them. And he who had received the 5 talents came forward, bringing 5 talents more, saying, "Master, you delivered to me 5 talents. Here, I've made 5 talents more." His master said to him, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master." And he also, who had the 2 talents, came forward saying, "Master, you delivered to me 2 talents. Here, I've made 2 talents more." His master said to him, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master." He also had received the 1 talent, came forward saying, "Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you scattered no seed. So I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here, you have what is yours." But his master answered him, "You wicked and slothful servant. You knew that I reap where I have not sown and gather where I scattered no seed. Then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers, and at my coming I should have received what was my own with interest. So take the talent from him and give it to him who has 10 talents. For to everyone who has not, even what he has will be taken away. And cast the worthless servant into the outer darkness. In that place, there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." There's a couple of things I want to point out about this story. One is we see 3 amounts, and the other is that there's 2 results. 2 types of servants, the faithful and the lazy. No matter the reward, the reward will be the same for the servant. No matter the amount, the reward will be the same for the servant. Verses 21 and 23 are identical. If you're memorizing scripture, that's a 2-for-1 there. If you memorize 21, you got 23, vice versa. Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful over little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master. But for the lazy servant, the punishment, even though he was responsible for the lowest amount, was the same as if he'd been given 10 talents or more. So first, let's talk about why the different amounts. Why 5, 2, and 1? Why not 3, 3, and 3, or 10, 10, 10, or why not equal amounts? It's about diversity. Verse 15 says, "To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, each according to his ability. Then he went away." Our Creator is a lover of variety. If order is the first law of creation, then variety is surely the second. These are both attributes of God that he loves to show us, his character traits that he loves to put on display, order and diversity. I just heard recently a Christian scholar discussing a case for intelligent design, and he was talking about Darwin. He's actually written a book called Darwin's Doubt. And Darwin, during his time, about 150 years ago, they discovered this Cambrian layer of fossils, this one layer of fossils that has a fair amount of diversity in it. I mean, there was, in fact, so much so that Darwin couldn't explain why there was this all of a sudden burst of life on the scene. And he couldn't come up with a reason. He theorized that in the future, as people dug deeper and figured things out, they would discover that these creatures had transitional creatures before them. It would all boil down to one creature. And you know, his theory is we all came from a one-celled organism. It's like a tree. And then everything's branched out from this one-celled organism to now we have the diversity that we have today. But they're found over the last 150 years that layer is way more diverse than they could have ever. Instead of finding transitional creatures and all, they keep finding in this same layer more and more and more diversity. In fact, so much so that one secular Chinese scientist has said that what this does is it takes Darwin's theory and flips it upside down. In other words, we started with a massive amount of diversity and it's going the other direction. Think of all the extinct animals and things that don't exist anymore, things they found fossils for. So a huge amount. God created this earth with a huge amount of diversity, the universe with a huge amount of diversity. Think about your human body. Think of all the different types of cells you have in your body. You have brain tissue, lung tissue, muscles, all the different functions that are going on in your body. The huge amount of diversity it takes up just to have a human body. And then think what we're described as. What are we described as? The church body, right? We're a church body. And God has done the same thing inside of his church body. He's filled it with diversity, filled it with a huge amount of gifts and a huge amount of service opportunities. Another attribute that God is fond of showing us is his sovereignty. He chooses where a toe goes and what it does, and he supplies the power to it. He designed the heart and the brain, and he does the same thing with his servants in the church. He distributes the gifts according to the abilities that he's given, and then he causes it all to work together. If you have issue with that, the fact that God gives whatever he wills to whomever he wills, let me ask you a question. You're a charitable person, right? You give generously with your time and money. What happens when somebody presumes on your charity? What if you gave something, some time or some money to somebody and they said, I don't want that. I didn't need that. I wanted this, something else. I wanted to do something else. So the same thing, our issue with God is the same thing that we commend in ourselves. Look at what good stewards we are. We can organize our time and money and take care of it the way we want. But we're stewards. God is no steward. He can distribute things however he wants. And you know what? When he distributes them how he wants, it's the best way. So why the diversity of gifts? Because that's the way God wants it, and it's what's best. And it shows us more about who he is, and he gets all the glory. So now let's take a look at the results, the two different results, the reaction of the master. Remember, the reward is the same. God does not reward us according to the amount we return to him. He does so on the basis of what we do with what he's given us. The faithful servant of God will enter into the joy of the Lord with well done, good and faithful servant ringing in their ears. The creator of the cosmos, the eternal King of kings, the God of the ages will say to you, come into my joy, good and faithful servant. Wow. But there's another result. The answer to a wasted life. There's a time, as we've discussed, when the master will return, or you will meet him. A time when accounts have to be settled. There's two things we should know about this settlement. Number one is it will be personal. It's not based on what church you went to, or what Bible study group you went to, or what family you belong to, which, by the way, are all things you've been given by God. But it's what have you done with what you were given. And it will be particular. It will be personal and it will be particular. Matthew 12:36 says, I tell you that everyone will have to give an account on the day of judgment for every empty word they have spoken. If we look at our whole life and we think, I've done pretty good. You know, maybe some little things here and there I'd change, some little things I would do different. I do all the big things good. I go to church. I do good at my job. I take care of my family. C.H. Spurgeon says this, do you know that yesterday was made up of little things, and the things of today are all little, and what you do tomorrow will all be little things? Every little thing counts. Every little thing will be counted. Have you ever heard this little saying, for want of a nail, a shoe was lost. For want of a shoe, the horse was lost. For want of a horse, the rider was lost. For want of a rider, the battle was lost. And for want of a battle, the war was lost. All because of a small horseshoe nail. So different amounts and gifts that have been given by God, and there's two different results. For the rest of my time, I want to point out a few things about the servant with the one talent, and then I want to end with some encouragement. Three things about the servant with one talent, that was given one talent. He was a servant. Seems kind of obvious, but he was a servant, or claimed to be. He lived under the master's roof. He ate the master's food. He worked around the master's house or fields, all until his heart was exposed. He said, Lord, here's what's yours. So he knew where it came from his Lord. This reminds me of Matthew 7:22-23. Jesus says, many will say to me on that day, Lord, Lord. And you remember what Jesus says to them. Second thing about the servant. He was responsible for the least amount, yet he was still accountable. He wasn't punished because he lost or squandered his master's money. He didn't lose anything. He wasn't cast into darkness because he was responsible for such a large amount. It was the least amount. So the servant was responsible. I think of it, I was working in multifamily housing before, and it reminds me of rent. Whether you pay $5 a month rent or $5,000 a month rent, if you don't pay your rent, you get evicted. We're all responsible. The servant was responsible for the smallest amount, but he's still responsible. The servant with one talent went out of his way. This is the third thing. He went out of his way to avoid doing anything with what he'd been given. It would have been easier for him to deposit the money and get back interest. Instead, he buried it in the field. Think about that. He'd have to figure out how to line it up, where it goes, go out and dig a big hole that you could put a huge sack in, bury it up, camouflage. You know, it took a lot of effort for him to go do that. He could have just gone down, gave it to the money changers. And when the master came back, he could have gone back and got it. Very simple. My mom used to say it this way. You could get more done if you quit spending so much time trying to get out of it. That's the kind of kid I was. I would spend tons of mental and physical energy to get out of doing something. It's the same thing the servant did here. He went out of his way to be lazy. So he was a servant, or claimed to be. He was responsible. And he went out of his way to be lazy. So here's some encouragement for you. The big encouragement is that we've been given things by our master. We've been given everything by our master. It's been said that no man has anything of his own except his sins. Think about that phrase for a second. No man has anything of his own except his sins. A couple of things I'd like to think about when we remember that our sovereign God has given us everything perfectly. If we really believe that God is the one who's given us the gifts, then there's a couple things we need to remember. First is, we don't need to be concerned with how much we perceive we've been given or not given. 1 Peter 1:3 says, His divine power has given us everything we need. So we don't need to worry about what we've been given. We really don't need to worry about what other people have been given or not given. And we don't need to wait until we think we have enough of this or that. Like, if I just get out of college, then I can really serve the Lord. If I get married, then I can serve. If I have kids, then I can serve. That job, if I got that, then I could serve the Lord. So we don't need to wait. We don't need to be concerned about what we've been given or not given. We don't need to, really don't need to be concerned about what other people have been given. And we don't need to wait. So now I'd like for you, if you've got a piece of paper and a pencil, I'd like you to write some of these things down. I'm going to give you a little peek into your talent bag that you've been given by God. And I want you to write these down. I'm going to give you a little phrase and a verse. And you can pull these things up. You can use these things throughout the week to encourage yourself. If you come up with more, write them down. Call me. Tell me about them. Encourage each other with them. Keep these things before us, the things that we've been given by God. Number one is your breath. Psalm 139, 13 says, we were knit together. God knit us together in our mother's womb. You're alive because God caused you to be born. We used to have an expression in the military for somebody that wasn't really pulling their weight, and we used to call them an oxygen thief. Somebody that was using up oxygen that I could be using to get the job done. It's a little coarse, but you get the idea. Every breath is a gift. Beautiful Eulogy, that's a group here in Portland, in the Portland area that you may or may not know, but it's a group called Beautiful Eulogy. They're a Christian rap group, and they have this great lyric in one of their songs that says, even the air we breathe is a gift we receive that we think we're entitled to. Even the air we breathe is a gift we receive that we think we're entitled to. Every breath is a gift. Most of you don't know me and don't know that Susan and I have only been married for almost 2 years. It's going to be 2 years in February. And I'm actually a widower. And my late wife, Becky, had a heart and lung disorder. And she was on oxygen 24 hours a day for 10 years. And for 10 years, at one point, right in the middle of that, she was even just given a year to live. By the doctors, and so for 10 years, every birthday, every Christmas, every Thanksgiving, every anniversary, you don't know. Is this the last one? I don't know. Every breath is precious. And then in June of 2012, I actually got to be with her when she breathed her last breath. So every breath is a gift from God. Dads, parents, children are a gift from God. This is number two, children. Psalm 127, 3 and 4. Children are a gift from God, a heritage, an inheritance from God. And blessed is the man whose quiver is full of them. Think about that analogy for a moment. Arrows in a quiver. Does an archer, a skilled archer, take his arrows in a quiver and set them over in the corner and point out to everybody his lovely quiver that's sitting over in the corner? Or does he have to take the arrow out, draw it back, aim it at a very specific target, and try and hit that target? It's work, but it's a gift from God. What are you doing with the gift you've been given from God in your children? Number three, we've been given each other. Each other. Ecclesiastes 4:12. A single three-strand cord is not easily broken, right? Remember back in the beginning when I was telling you what a talent is? A talent is enough for one man to carry, one able man to carry. What do you think the guy that was given five talents did? When his master said, here's five talents, you think he made five trips with it? Or you think he maybe grabbed some of his buddies and said, hey, can you come help me carry these and get these out of here, right? We've been given each other. Sometimes God gives us too much to bear alone. He gave the man five talents. He couldn't carry that by himself. So sometimes he gives us things that we can't bear on our own. We need each other. And God has given us that gift. What about a fresh start? What about your salvation you've been given by God? Just a handful of passages here. There's many, many. But 1 Peter 1:3, 1 John 3:16, Philippians 2, 5, and 8. 1 John 3:16 says, we know love by this, that God, Christ gave himself for us, and we ought to give ourselves to the brethren. Philippians 2 talks about Christ emptying himself and coming to earth. Just think about that just for a small moment. The God of the universe, the creator of everything, came to earth as a small, helpless child, lived a perfect, sinless life, died on the cross, a horrible death, took your sin on himself, not because of all the great things you've done, but because he loved you and gave himself for you. Can't really bury that in the ground, can we? What about all God's promises? All God's promises. 2 Peter 1:4 says he's given us all his magnificent promises. One of my favorites, Romans 8:28. We know that God causes all things to work together for good to those who love God, those who are called according to his purpose. All those promises in the Word of God are his gifts to you. Here's a little tougher one. What about your trials? What about what you're learning or what you've learned in your trials are a gift from God? James 1, 2 through 4. Consider it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance. Let endurance have its perfect result, so that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. So those are just a handful of things. Take those things with you. Look in your talent bag every once in a while. Don't bury it. Just remember what's in there and think about some of the things that God has given us. 1 Peter, the first time I taught this at Robinwood, I read 1 Peter 1, 2 through 11. I'd like for you to write that down too and just read that later this afternoon when you get home. This is Peter writing. Remember, Peter was here. Peter was standing next to Jesus when he told this parable. He was one of the disciples that asked, what's the end time? What, you know, how do we know when the end's coming? What's it going to be like? Peter was standing right there. He heard this parable firsthand. Then Peter was there when the master left, when he was transcended and went to heaven. Peter stood there and watched the master go away. So I think this passage in Peter is really Peter telling us, that reminds me of a story that Jesus told me when I was walking with him. And that first part of 1 Peter really explains what this parable is really about. So read that when you get home. It's good. But today I want to leave you with a thought from Titus, from Paul's letter to Titus. This fact that our hope is that the Master is returning. And he's provided us with everything. And the fact that he's coming back gives us motivation, knowing that we will hear, well done, good and faithful servant. I want to remind you, you're not saved by your works, right? You're not saved by your works. But because we're saved, we work. Because we've been given all these things, there's no other way to react to it. Titus 2 says this, for the grace of God has appeared that offers salvation to all people. It teaches us to say no to ungodliness and worldly passions and to live self-controlled, upright, godly lives in this present age. While we wait for the blessed hope, the appearing of the glory of our great God and Savior, Jesus Christ, who gave himself for us to redeem us from all wickedness and to purify for himself a people that are his very own, eager to do what is good. And just a few verses later, like I said, you're not saved by your works. Just a few verses later, it tells us that it's not, he saved us not based on our good deeds, but on his mercy. That's in the first part of chapter 3 of Titus. That's the idea. We're eager to do what is good because we have this hope that our master's returning and he's given us everything we need. Romans 12:1 says, I can stand here with Paul and say this to you. I urge you, therefore, after 11 chapters of doctrine and the grace of God and the things he's done for us, in chapter 12, he says, I urge you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, present your bodies a living sacrifice. And then the wording really after that is, it's the only thing that makes sense. It's the only thing that makes sense. So I hope you've been encouraged by this. I hope you can take some of these things and be encouraged by them as I've been encouraged by them. And remember what God has done for us. He's done everything for us. And then how's that going to change your life? Let's pray.